morning, everyone. We are in this series called Practice Makes Present, and we've been looking at some common and important practices or habits or disciplines that we should incorporate into our lives. And today we're going to look at a couple of practices that are deeply related and interconnected. And the first we're really, really good at already. And the second, almost none of us actually do. So the first is the practice of feasting. Right? We're really good at this. And there's all kinds of biblical precedent for this. There are so many stories in the Bible about people gathering around food and gathering around the table to feast, right? They feasted at holidays. They feasted when friends and family came over. They feasted whenever they had a reason to celebrate something going on in their lives. There's stories of like the Passover feast in the Old Testament, of the Israelites remembering and celebrating something. Oftentimes they feasted on and celebrated what God had done in their lives. And then in the New Testament, Christians gathered at a table regularly, and they took communion, and they had a feast. In fact, the early Christians actually called communion a love feast because they were celebrating and remembering the love that God had shown them through Jesus. Now, we're really good at feasting in our culture, are we not? I heard a right, from Dan, right? Yes. We're good at feasting, right? We celebrate with food all the time. We invite friends over, and we make feasts for them, right? Or we go out and feast. We feast at holidays, every single holiday. In about 3.5 weeks, we're going to feast, right? We're all going to spend one day, yes. We're going to spend a whole day preparing so much food, 14 times more food than we actually need to eat, right? And then we're going to have leftovers for the next week, because of this feast. So we're really, really good at feasting. But there's a related practice that most of us are fairly clueless about, a related practice that none of us are really excited about. We're really good at feasting. We're not so good when it comes to fasting, right? We sent out a survey a couple of months ago to everyone in our community, and a bunch of you responded. We had over 100 people respond back. And one of the questions on that survey was, here's a list of common practices that followers of Jesus sometimes do, and we listed 11 practices. And check the boxes on those practices that you regularly do in your life. And the lowest practice that was marked was fasting. In fact, it was so low, the second lowest wasn't even close to it. 23% of people marked the second lowest one, and we're going to look at that one next week. Only 5% of people said that fasting is something they sometimes do in their lives. Now, if I could address the 95% of us this morning that don't fast, right, my hunch is there's two groups of people represented here this morning. One group of people are those of you who heard of fasting before. Maybe you've been a Christian for quite a while, and you know what fasting is, right? It's not eating food for a meal or for a couple of meals. It's going without food. And maybe you even tried it at one point, and you got a headache, or it wasn't fun, or there was nothing exciting about it. And it's just not something you do. It's something that the super spiritual people or the super religious people or the Gandhis of the world, it's something that they do, but and you're not against fasting, right? You think it's probably a cool thing for some people. It's just not your thing. That's group one. Group two, some of you are here today, and you're freaked out a little bit right now because fasting is so off your radar. It's not something you've ever even thought about. When you heard the word fasting, you thought of like this monk living out in the desert, this ascetic lifestyle, not eating any food. Fasting is something that cults do, right, to get people. Like, it's just one of those really strange and weird things. And right now, you're kind of looking for the exit, like wondering how quickly you can get out. If this is something we're going to talk, if this is one of those churches, like you're just thinking about that. So here's what I want to do. I want to address both groups this morning. So if you're in group two, I want to help you see it's not actually as weird and strange and odd and cultish as maybe you think, that it's actually quite normal and natural, and that you've actually fasted before and you didn't even know it. And if you're in group one, I want to help you see that it's not something for super spiritual people, and it's not something for, you know, Gandhi or the super sort of religious kind of people, but it's something that maybe you could incorporate into your life as a helpful and healthy habit or practice. Now, let me tell you how the authors of the Bible describe fasting, because there's all kinds of stories of people who fasted in the Bible. And if you put all those stories and all those teachings together, this is kind of a definition that we could put together. And it might be different than what you think. Here's the definition. Fasting is a person's whole body, natural response to life's sacred moments. Let me unpack that definition. First, fasting involves your whole body, right? Fasting is literally going without food for some period of time. So it is starving your body from the nutrients that it needs, and you feel it in your entire body, your muscles, and you feel these hunger pains, and it's that goes without saying, right? Well, of course, fasting is physical, and it's a whole body thing, but we need to just stop there and think about that, because it's not just an emotional thing. It's not something you think about. It's not something you feel. It's something that you tangibly, physically, concretely, palpably, it's this very physical practice that involves your actual body. But it's also something that's very natural. So it's a person's whole body, natural response. In other words, fasting is actually part of the natural rhythm of the way God made us. If you think about food for a second, most of the time we sort of eat food in a normal, ordinary way. So let's just call that ordinary eating, right? You just kind of eat breakfast and lunch and dinner and you snack and you do all those things and you just sort of eat normal food. But then there's times, which I mentioned before, where we feast, right? There's times where it's appropriate to cook a big meal and to celebrate something with food. You get a new job or you get a new raise or someone's getting married or there's something to celebrate or somebody's birthday party. And so we cook a lot of food and we eat a lot of food and we feast. It's just appropriate and it's normal. That's what you invite friends over, and you don't just give them a little bit of food, right? You make your best meal for them and you make sure to make extra, because feasting is a normal part of life, to celebrate things in life. But on the other hand, fasting is also natural and normal. There's times and there's moments and there's seasons in our lives where it's actually appropriate to not eat food. Let me give you an example that probably all of us have experienced. A number of years ago, I got a phone call that a good friend of mine suddenly died. He was young, he was in his 20s, he was married, had a one-year-old little girl. And of course, when something like that happens, you go through all kinds of emotions of shock and anger and confusion and frustration, because I hadn't talked to him in a while and just all of those things, right? But more than anything else, what do you feel? You feel grief. You feel this overwhelming sense of sadness and loss. And in those moments, you lose your appetite, right? You don't even want to eat, because it's like your body is expressing something that your heart and your mind are also expressing. Your whole body is responding to this circumstance, this thing that has happened, this jolted you, and you're experiencing in a very tangible, whole body way this grief and this mourning and this loss. If you've ever gotten bad news like that, if you've ever had a loved one who's close to you or someone in your family die suddenly, you know that feeling, and you lose your appetite and you don't even want to eat. And people bring all kinds of food over to your house because they're being nice and they're being gracious. And that's just what we do as a community when people are going through tragedies, and it's like the food just piles. I mean, you eat some because you're supposed to do that, but you don't feel like it, right? And then what's interesting is oftentimes a few days later, something changes. You have the funeral or the memorial service. And certainly the grief and the sorrow and the pain don't go away. The loss is still there. You're going to deal with that for days and weeks and months and maybe even years. And yet at a memorial service, what do? You celebrate someone. You celebrate their life and you remember all the good and amazing things about them. And then what do? Right after the memorial service, you go downstairs to the fellowship hall, right? Or you go back to somebody's house and people bring even more food. And it's almost like you can't put your finger on it, but something changes just a little bit, because now it feels okay to celebrate that person and celebrate their life. You see, fasting and responding in this kind of way to these kind of moments and these kind of seasons in our lives, feasting and fasting is a very natural thing for us. But note this. Let's go back a couple slides. Note this. It's a whole person's whole body natural response. So fasting is actually a response to something that has happened. In other words, you don't fast in order to get something. You don't fast to look ahead. Fasting isn't supercharged prayer, right? God, I really want this job, and to show you how much I really want it, I'm going to fast for the next day to like really demonstrate it to you. That's not fasting. That's begging, right? And begging's appropriate, right? It's okay to beg God for the job or the raise or the boyfriend or whatever it is you really, really want. Like, it's okay to beg. But fasting's not the way to do it. There are hardly any stories in the Bible where people are begging God and that's the way, like, they're demonstrating their seriousness and I'm really committed, so I'm going to fast. And so that means I want this and it should happen, right? We don't fast as a means to an end. We don't fast in order to get results. Which is tricky because sometimes when you fast, things might change or something might happen, but that's not why people, at least in the Bible, fasted. Fasting for most of the people in the Bible was a natural response to something that had happened, to a sacred moment that had happened. So what are those sacred moments? Well, here's what they are. First is grief, which I already mentioned. And I'll talk about what fasting looks like practically in just a couple of minutes, but grief is when you have a significant loss in your life, and your body is expressing this grief and this mourning in its own way. There's all kinds of examples of this in the Bible. Let me hit a couple of them. We won't put them on the screen. I'll just go through them real quickly. In the book of 1 and 2 Samuel, there's lots of examples of this. In the beginning, there's this woman named Hannah, and she's infertile. She can't have children, and she's mourning over that loss in her life, and it says that she embodies that grief and that loss by not eating food, by fasting. At the end of 1 Samuel, King Saul and his son Jonathan die. And it says the group of Israelites who find them and bury their bodies, they then fast for 7 days to mourn this loss. When David and his men find out a few days later that Saul and Jonathan, whom he loved, had died, David fasts as well. And even a few days later, David finds out another one of his friends and allies, a guy named Abner, is murdered. And it says David fasts again. In fact, look at what happens. This is a verse. We're going to read a few verses this morning. But this is from 2 Samuel chapter 3. It says this: "Then they all came and they urged David to eat something while it was still day. But David took an oath saying, 'May God deal with me, be it ever so severely, if I taste bread or anything else before the sun sets.'" In other words, David's basically saying, it just wouldn't be right to enjoy food right now. It doesn't express the grief that's in my heart to eat a lavish meal right now. And we might not think of grief or loss as a sacred moment, but it is, because God's grieving too. And God's grieving with you, and he's near to you, maybe more than in any other way in your grief. A second sacred moment that can provoke fasting is distress. So there's grief, and then there's distress. When you or someone close to you is in danger, when you feel like you're in distress, there's all kinds of examples of this. There's a king in the Bible named King Jehoshaphat. In 2 Chronicles chapter 20, it tells a story of where the armies of their enemies surrounded the entire nation of Judah, and so he gathered all the people together and fasted. And he said, we need to fast because now is the time for us to put our reliance and our full trust in God to save us. Esther does the same thing. There's this whole book where all the Jews are threatened by something terrible that's going to happen. And so she calls all the Jews together and she says, let's fast for 3 days to call out to God and put our trust in him in our time of distress. King David, who had lots of tragedy, as you can see already, in his life, his son was sick and dying one time. And in 2 Samuel 11, it says he refused to eat. He laid on the ground in distress and fasted as he called out to God. And in this way, fasting can be like a form of prayer, right? It's pleading for God to intervene. Now, it's not a magic bullet, And it's not saying here's the only result that you can bring about God. And it doesn't assure that God's going to answer your prayer the way you want. It didn't go that way for David. But it's a physical response to the distress that you're feeling. There's a third thing that can cause us to fast. So there's grief, there's distress, but the third is injustice. So we look around and see the injustice in our world. We see people who are broken, people who are poor, people who are experiencing oppression, systematic injustice, or they're just being taken advantage of. It can provoke us to fast. In fact, one time Isaiah called out the people of Israel, and he said, look, sometimes you fast, but when you fast, it's only about yourselves. It's only about what you want and what's going on in your life. But that's not the kind of fast God always wants. And look at what he says. This is in Isaiah chapter 58. He says, is that what you call a fast? A day acceptable to the Lord? Is this, and now he's channeling God's message, is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry? And then he goes on and says a bunch of other things. But basically what Isaiah is saying is sometimes you fast on behalf of the poor and the oppressed to identify with them, to identify with God's heart who is broken for them. And it might even provoke you to action. It might even provoke you to doing things about the injustice in our world. So we fast in response to grief, distress, injustice. But the fourth is probably the most common in the Bible. We fast in response to our own sin. Sin is simply, it's one of those sort of churchy religious words that is just simply when you've done something wrong. And it's not like you broke a law. It's you've done something to hurt somebody else or to hurt yourself, which means you're also hurting God because he made all of us in his image. And so sin, when we sin, we do something to hurt ourselves or to hurt someone else, and we realize it, whether it's a pattern or habit or we lie or whatever it is. And we come to God and we repent. The Bible uses another word that basically just means I come to God and I acknowledge I shouldn't have done that. That was horrible. Or I need to stop doing this and it's bad and it's hurting my family. It's hurting this person. Or it's hurting myself. And I want to turn to you, God. I want to turn away from this bad habit and I want to turn to you. That's repentance. And oftentimes people fasted as a way of acknowledging and grieving over their own sin and turning their lives to God, and it physically expresses this turning to God. A few examples. Moses came down from Mount Sinai. Remember, he got the Ten Commandments, Charlton Heston, right? And he gets the Ten Commandments, and he comes down from the top of Mount Sinai, and the people have made this golden idol, this calf that they're worshiping, and he's so frustrated and mad about it, and God is mad about it as well. And we're going to read this story in a few months together as we kind of go through a different series, but he's so mad about it. Remember, he breaks the tablets and then he goes back up to the mountain and he fasts for 40 days over the people's sin. He's grieving over their sin. The king of Nineveh in the book of Jonah, remember when he discovers his own sin and the people's sin, he calls the entire city to fast before God as a way of turning away from their sin and turning towards God. And then in the New Testament, here's an interesting example. Paul, remember the story of when he meets Jesus? He's blinded on this road one day. And he tells a story three times in the book of Acts. And there's one little detail in that story that we often skip over. We don't even realize. He realizes his sin. And look at what it says. This is in Acts chapter 9. It says, for 3 days he was blind, and he did not eat or drink anything. You see, when you come face to face with your sin, fasting is a natural response. Just lose your appetite and say, God, I lay myself out before you. This is me turning over to you. Now, so these are four things: grief, distress, injustice, and sin. And you probably wouldn't think of these as sacred moments, right? But what makes them sacred is the way they connect us to God. You see, in our grief and in our distress and in the injustice in this world, and even in coming face to face with our sin, those are probably the times and the seasons in our life where we are most desperate and most connected to God in our lives. And that's what makes them sacred moments. One other kind of catch-all category I want to give you, and it's this: whenever there's something that happens in our lives and we're acutely aware of our need for God's grace and his presence, it's a good reason to fast. I think this is what Jesus did. He gets baptized, and he becomes aware that he's about to go into public ministry. He's about to take on the responsibility and the mission and the task that God has given him to proclaim the good news of God's kingdom to everybody. And so he goes into the wilderness, and he fasts for 40 days. And I don't think he's fasting in response to sin or distress or injustice or anything. I think he's fasting because he's acutely and intensely aware that he needs God's presence and grace with him as he goes to undertake this task. And so for us, whenever you have one of those seasons or moments in your life, in your day or in your week, whenever you're facing grief or distress or injustice or your own sin, or you're just acutely aware of a need for God's mercy and grace in your life, what would it look like for you to say, I'm going to fast tomorrow. I'm going to fast this weekend in light of this. In light of this, in such a way that I'm tangibly expressing my need for God's grace and mercy in my life right now. Now, that's what fasting is, and I'm going to describe how we do it in just a second. But there's one other element that's really important, because while people often fasted in response to something that had happened, it was also embraced as a regular practice by followers of Jesus. That fasting didn't just become a one-off thing that they did every once in a while. It became a practice that they actually incorporated into their lives, because we make it a practice to feast regularly, right? I mean, we have holidays almost every single month of the year, and every single holiday we feast, right? And we feast whenever good things happen. So what would it look like if we made it a practice to fast regularly? Ancient Israelites, one time a year, celebrated a holiday called Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and the entire nation fasted on that day as a way of acknowledging and confessing their sin and their shortcomings and their faults to God and throwing themselves on his mercy. As the nation went on, they began to add other holidays and times where they fasted. After the Babylonians destroyed the nation, they added four more holidays every year where they would fast to remember what had happened to their nation and remember the grief and distress that they often had in the life of their nation. And then they added more holidays so that by the time you got to the time of Jesus, Jews decided that it wasn't enough to just fast on holidays once a month. They'd actually begun fasting every single week. So at the time of Jesus, faithful Jews would fast every single Monday and every single Thursday. Early Christians were Jews, and they were followers of Jesus. They believed Jesus was the Messiah, and they adopted that practice as well. They switched days. I don't know if they did that so that they wouldn't be confused with those who didn't believe in Jesus, but they began fasting every single Wednesday and Friday. That's what early followers of Jesus did. Later Christians would add holidays and seasons where they would fast. A season called Lent, where they would fast. Other seasons in the calendar where they would fast. And you even get down all throughout church history, Christians have embraced this practice that there should be seasons and regular times where we should fast before God. Even Martin Luther, whom maybe some of you know, 500 years ago this past week, was when he nailed these 95 theses to this door, and he set off what became the Protestant Reformation. And sort of he challenged all the rituals and meaningless things that he thought he saw in the church at that time. Even Martin Luther, who was so scared that anything could become a ritual, anything could become something we just do and it's not meaningful at all. Even Luther said followers of Jesus should fast every single week. He suggested on Fridays. And then he said there's seasons during the year, particularly during Advent, Lent, and Pentecost, that Christians particularly should fast. Now, why? Why make fasting a regular practice in our lives? Well, because like every single practice we've looked at in this series over the last several weeks, practices make us present. Practices make us present to what's happening in the world around us, to the people around us, to what God is up to. And I think fasting in particular can make us present to the grief that we should be experiencing and observing. We skip over that. We have so many distractions and busyness. We don't actually deal with the grief in our lives. And so we stuff it deep down and then we become depressed and we have internalized and all these things. What if there was a practice every week where we said, what do I need to grieve over or lament this week? They make us present to distress, to the things that we need to call out to God for. They make us present to the injustice in our world. They make us present to our own sin and where we fall short. And they certainly make us present to God's grace and mercy and presence in our lives. And so here's the challenge that I have for you this week. You kind of know it's coming, right? I mean, you go out and feast this week, right? I mean, here's the challenge. We'll put this on the screen. I want you to give fasting a try this week. I want you to try fasting one day this week, and you can pick any day you want this week. I think Friday is an easy day to remember, like Friday fasting, you know. So maybe try doing it on Friday, but you can pick any day. And here's three different ways you can do it. I'll give you three different suggestions. One, you can try a half-day fast. If you've never fasted before, if this is new and you want to try sort of a baby step, then that's great. So a half-day fast would just be skipping lunch on Friday or whatever day you do it. So between, you know, ending breakfast and dinner that night, not eating any food during the day. Drink some water to stay hydrated, but don't eat any food throughout the day. That would be a half-day fast. Second option would be to fast for a whole day. And this is where you go 24 hours without eating. And actually the easiest way to do this, and this is the way most ancient Jews did this, would go from dinner one night to dinner the next night. So if you're doing it on Friday, you would start fasting after dinner on Thursday night, and you would go with no food until dinner on Friday night. And you could drink, you know, water during that time to stay hydrated, but you would abstain from all food for that 24 hours. That would be a full day fast, and that's probably the most common form of fasting that we see in the Bible. Or third, here's a third option, if you have specific health considerations. Obviously, you need to take those into consideration. By all means, don't fast from any food that is necessary, or if you're a diabetic or anything like that. You know what you need, but maybe it's fasting from certain foods. Maybe in light of your health considerations, you just drink juice and eat bread throughout the day. Maybe it's not eating certain kinds of luxury foods, going without your Starbucks or whatever it is. But maybe there's certain things that you can go without. Obviously, you need to consult your own doctor and figure out what your health needs are, but you can alter it to have a fast that would be meaningful for you. But let me say this, if you give this a try and if you've never done this, it's not going to be easy, right? If you have lunch meetings regularly, you'll have to work around those because it's kind of a hassle. When you skip a meal or a couple meals, guess what? You're going to get hungry, right? And you're going to feel it. That's called hunger pain. That's kind of the point, right? And if you feel that pain, and oftentimes I get headaches when I do this. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. But when you feel that, you're reminded. It reminds me that there's actually a deeper hunger in my soul. And there's a deeper awareness that I need God's grace, his sustaining grace in my life. And if you try it this week, let me make one more suggestion for you, another challenge. Consider doing it every week or consider doing it once a month. We used to do this at our church. We had a group of people. We would do it the first Friday of every month. Maybe give that a try. But consider making it a regular practice that you incorporate into your life. Now, let me close with just a few warnings, and then we'll wrap up. Few warnings. First, don't fast to say, look how awesome I am, God, right? This is not just a way to impress God. This is not supercharged prayer. This isn't, it's just a physical expression of your prayer. Another warning, don't fast to earn God's love. I mean, you can't earn God's love. You already have God's love. He loves you whether you fast or not. This isn't about that. Another one, don't fast for attention from others. Jesus warned about this. You don't need to take a picture of your empty plate and put it on Instagram, right? Fasting today, you know, blessed by God. Still hungry, still blessed, I don't know. If you fast, don't make a big deal out of it. Just do it. Just do it. I mean, now, if somebody asks you about it or figures out what you're doing, you don't have to hide it and be secretive about it either, right? That's weird. Like, just tell them what you're doing and explain to them why, but just do it. It's not about others. Another warning, don't fast to lose weight. Seriously, that's not what this is about. This has nothing to do with losing weight. If you have issues with weight or losing it or whatever it is, that's something to deal with totally separately. Fasting is not related to that at all. Another warning, don't try to be too radical. Seriously, don't try to be too radical. There are a couple of stories in the Bible of people that fasted for many, many days, long periods of time. The overwhelming number of stories in the Bible are people that fasted 1 or 2 days. So start there. Another warning, don't be too legalistic. You're going to stumble from time to time. You're going to wake up Friday morning and eat a donut, and then remember after you eat the donut, or you're going to intentionally eat a donut and then remember or whatever, but it's okay. Laugh it off. It's okay. God's not upset with you because you tried something and then you miserably failed. It's not a big deal. Laugh it off. He's laughing it off with you, and then give it another try. Don't sweat about it too much. And then the last one. Don't expect instant gratification or results. Like everything we've been talking about, this is a long-term practice. When you do it this week, not if, when, right? When you give this a try this week, you might not have a mystical experience with God, right? You might not get all the answers to your prayers that you've been praying. You might not get all the answers to all the questions that you've had in the past. You might not be suddenly freed from all of your struggles, but it's not about those things. In fact, it's not about what you get out of it in the short term at all. It's about a practice over the long haul. And over the long term, it's about a practice that makes us present to grief, to distress, to injustice, to our own sin, and to our need for God's grace. It's not a practice that makes you perfect. It's a practice that makes you present. Let me pray. Father God, thank you for all the examples you gave us in Scripture about people who fasted at times just naturally out of a response to something they were going through, because we resonate with that, and we know that when life is tough, our bodies respond in that way, and that's just the way we are. And so, God, we pray that you would meet us in those moments and in those circumstances and in those situations. And for all of us, wherever we are on our journey of faith, for those of us who have been following you for a long time, for those of us who are new at this, for those of us who walk through the doors this morning with all kinds of questions about who you are and what you're like and what all of this means, God, we need you to meet us in those questions. And so we turn to you this morning. And more than anything else, we just ask for your grace in our lives. I pray this in your name. Amen.